Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open with some national news stories from Public News Service, including a huge settlement in the Fox News defamation lawsuit, a troubling shooting of a black teen who went to the wrong house, and House Republicans taking aim at equity. Then we'll have a special report on a heated hearing in Alpine over the future of Loveland Reservoir, which has been closed since January. You'll hear what Sweetwater Water Authority officials have to say about it, as well as members of the public and Alpine Community Planning Group members. In other local news, an El Cajon man has died after contracting flesh-eating bacteria from a pond left by rainwater in Julian. El Cajon is cracking down on a motel where sex offenders were arrested for allegedly assaulting a young teen girl. SDG&E has applied for federal grants for wildfire prevention efforts. Then on Destination East County, hear about events coming up across our inland region, from a rodeo and parade to car shows, concerts, a wine festival, and a fundraiser for an exotic animal sanctuary. Next up, hear about a dramatic rescue of a horse that fell 100 feet down a ravine in Julian. A man arrested in El Cajon has died in custody at the Vista Detention Center. Scammers are targeting EBT cards, stealing money that recipients need for food. Learn how to protect yourself on our show today. And finally, we'll have details on scholarships offered by SDG&E to help students get higher education for careers in STEM fields. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Lies have consequences. The truth does not know red or blue.
Dominion Voting Systems lawyer Justin Nelson says the company has reached a more than $787 million settlement in its defamation lawsuit against Fox News. Dominion argued Fox had damaged the company's reputation by promoting false conspiracy theories about its equipment switching votes in the 2020 presidential election. Revealed text messages show many of Fox hosts and executives didn't believe the claims but continued to air them. Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas is urging his community to remain calm following the shooting of 16-year-old Ralph Yarl.
This child and this child's family knows that there are people working hard, a number of people working hard, to make sure there is justice for this person.
Lucas says the young black man was shot twice after approaching a home where he believed his younger siblings were waiting. Yarl is now recovering at home. The white elderly homeowner has been charged with first-degree assault but has not been taken into custody. Senator John Cornyn of Texas says Republicans will not allow Democrats to temporarily replace an ailing Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Republicans are not going to break this precedent in order to bail out Senator Schumer or the Biden administration's most controversial nominees.
Democrats say there are currently 12 federal judge nominees they've been unable to advance because of Feinstein's absence and that those judges could be weighing in on abortion rights. President Biden has signed an executive order with more than 50 directives meant to increase access to child care and improve the work life of caregivers.
The executive order doesn't require any new spending. It's about making sure taxpayers will get the best value for the investments they've already made.
The order would raise pay and benefits for staff of Head Start programs, improve child care options for federal workers and military families, and improve home-based care for veterans. Republican lawmakers in at least a dozen states have proposed more than 30 bills this year targeting diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts in higher education, according to the Associated Press. That includes Florida, where Governor Ron DeSantis has signed the so-called Stop Woke Law.
In the state of Florida, we're proud to stand for education, not indoctrination in our schools.
The law bars businesses, colleges, and K-12 schools from giving training on certain racial concepts, including that people of a particular race are inherently privileged or oppressed. Lawyers for anti-abortion doctors on Tuesday urged the Supreme Court to allow restrictions to take effect on the abortion medication drug mifepristone while a lawsuit continues. A decision is expected by late Wednesday. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A crowd of more than 100 angry residents turned out at the Alpine Community Planning Group hearing on March 23rd, where Sweetwater Water Authority officials addressed concerns over damage at Loveland Reservoir after Sweetwater drained the lake to Deadpool status for the first time in history. Audience members and planning group members peppered Sweetwater officials with questions in the, at times, contentious session. Sweetwater officials pledged to restore the fishing dock, but said erosion from recent rains has been so severe that a bridge needs to be built before some trails can be reopened. The district is also awaiting a report on repairs needed to the 80-year-old dam. As for restoring fish killed by the draining, the district says it plans to restore the fishing program, but state and federal wildlife officials must also weigh in. The district's representatives declined repeated requests to commit to a reopening date or to agree not to drain the reservoir below minimum pool status in the future, as had been the situation prior to late last year when the district cited drought and saving its ratepayers the cost of imported water as reasons to drain Loveland to Deadpool status and destroy recreational uses. Steve Castaneda, chair of the Sweetwater Board of Directors, told the crowd that Sweetwater is willing to work with the community.
I think that the fact that we're here in what would be probably not very friendly an environment, I think is testament to the fact is that we want to work with your community.
He then explained that the Water District's first obligation is to its 200,000 ratepayers in Chula Vista, National City, and Bonita. None of the Alpine residents impacted by draining Loveland Reservoir live in that district, so they cannot vote for these directors. Castaneda spoke about how the district has sought to diversify its water resources.
Because we are more diversified in terms of our the water that we sell to our customers than pretty much any other agency within San Diego County. Clearly, we have the Loveland Reservoir, which is a freshwater drinking reservoir. We also have the Sweetwater Lake, which we have a water treatment facility there, which we distribute to our customers. We also have a series of wells in Western Chula Vista and National City, and we have a desalination plant that also is a National City, and we serve parts of Western Chula Vista and National City with those facilities as well. There are times, and again, we've had to do this more than anybody that sits on the board, and clearly our staff as well, where we have to buy water from the County Water Authority. As any of you know, water's not cheap. And I do appreciate the fact that, you know, there are situations and strains on the groundwater aquifers. And so we can't over draft those aquifers because the state will shut us down. I think anybody that's got a well kind of understands the regulations there.
Carlos Quinteros, Sweetwater's general manager, explained that the cost to buy water from the San Diego County Water Authority is $1,300 per acre foot, much higher than the $100 per acre foot that it costs to use surface water from the district's reservoirs. Historically, Sweetwater has transferred water out of the reservoir but always maintained a minimum pool level to sustain fish until recently. The damage could have been even worse and longer lasting if not for recent rains that were the heaviest in decades. The rains have filled Loveland to 66% and Sweetwater to 74%, according to the district's website as of our press taping deadline. But Castaneda was adamant in insisting that the district has the right to drain the reservoir again if needed.
It's a freshwater reservoir. It's not a lake, it's not a fishing pond and everything. First and foremost, it is, and it's owned by the Sweetwater Authority. So we have the right to drain that. We hope that we're going to get enough rain moving forward that we're not going to have to do it to that level.
Throughout the meeting, he refused multiple requests to commit not to drain the lake below minimum pool level again, angering the residents present. The first public speaker was Josh Francois, who said he spent over 30 years with Cal Fire in aviation. He spoke of how important keeping water in Loveland is to protect the community during wildfires.
My name is John Francois. I'm a 30-plus year resident of Alpine. I did 32 years with Cal Fire. When I retired with Cal Fire, I was chief of aviation. I tell you right now, Loveland is a critical piece of infrastructure out here for our fire protection for our aircraft. I'm not talking air tanks. I'm talking about the sky cranes that SDG&E had to provide to us because of the Southwest Power Link, the Sunrise Power Link. That aircraft 2,500 gallons of water per drop when it's using Loveland on the Valley Fire. Kept that fire from taking a lot more houses in the community of Lyons Valley and Humboldt. Let's go back to fire history. Laguna Fire came right through where Loveland's at. It ended up going to where your ratepayers are. You talked about your ratepayers. All these fires out here, ask the people in Scripps Ranch, that fire in Julian didn't go into their house. It's a matter of time for a fire in Alpine, goes into Chula Vista, goes into Bonita. The Harris Fire got really close. A lot of fires in Humboldt down Proctor Valley head that way. What you don't understand is most of the fires out here, because of our aviation assets, are less than 10 acres. So you never hear about them. Your ratepayers never hear about them. We hear about them because there's an evacuation going on, or we use those aircraft to keep that fire in check. When you shrink that surface area of that lake, I can only get maybe two or three helicopters in a daisy chain to start working that fire. We can work five or six sky cranes, a bunch of Hueys. The Sheriff's Department has three Hueys, tank ships to work reservoirs just like that. I heard you mention CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE doesn't make comments on public water use like that. That land is federal land, U.S. Forest Service. Not CAL FIRE decal there, it's Forest Service. We do not make public policy on water use. If there's water being used, we're going to, during a fire, we can use anybody's water. Especially out here with the ranchers, if the ranchers said, hey, we need some water replaced, they talk to the IC, usually we'll get water tenders and refill their stock funds. What you're doing now is you're draining water down to Sweetwater. You talk about the age of Loveland's dam, I guarantee you Sweetwater's dam is the same age as Loveland's. You have to have one to do the other, right?
We're doing both.
We need to do both, but still, right now, what you guys are doing in a court of public opinion someday when that fire, it's going to be a matter of when, it's not if, it's when, that fire is going to come from Alpine into your ratepayers. We're going to go, we told them we couldn't get enough water on that initial attack. That 10 acre fire we could have picked up is now 20,000 acres. We've lost lives. Every major fire we had in San Diego, we've lost lives. And unfortunately, you probably don't know, that San Diego County has the most wildland firefighter deaths anywhere in the country. Anywhere in the country, do the research.
Many residents spoke about what Loveland meant to them, including David Thomas, who also accused the district of failing to honor a land swap with Cleveland National Forest that was supposed to assure fishing access at Loveland. He accused district officials of misleading the public.
My name is David Thomas. I've been a resident of Alpine for 52 years. I grew up getting to go to Loveland and fish. I started fishing in Loveland when I was 8 years old. We had the government code, so we would get to go down there and fish. And in 52 years, they never, ever did this to our lake. Ever. I've never seen our lake done this. And why they wouldn't have a transparency to show us what happened when they did this. Why they didn't show us the amount of dead fish that we saw floating in that lake every single day. They dug pits and they buried the fish that were in that lake and they're gone. They're dead. There's very few anything living in that lake. There was never a reason in all the years to ever bring it down to a dead pool. We had minimum pool. The lake survived every time you took it to a minimum pool. It was in minimum pool at this time. There was no reason to do what they did. They killed this lake because they wanted to kill some other things like the fishing program. They received a whole bunch of land in a land swap that we made happen so that we could have the East End to fish. And they got a whole lot of money and a whole lot of things out of this, and they mismanaged it heavily. They mismanaged a lot of things like the amount of water that they should be making. And they've taken money from the state of California and they've misused it. They've lied to us over and over again. During all of COVID, they kept that lake closed. That lake was the only place that we should have been. There's never been anybody close to each other, but they closed it, and we fought hard to keep it open, and they continued to find reasons to close it. All the years that I was first going there, Steve Parker ran that, and it was never needed all these employees and all these things, and they lied. They've lied to us over and over again about so many things. And they stand here tonight, and they look at you like they're doing something good, and they've not done anything good for any of us, including me, and they've taken away a real precious resource, and those fish will never be back when you killed them.
Karen Wood, a real estate agent and Alpine resident, noted that the district's mission statement on its website requires that it balance human and environmental needs. Then she said,
They have not been a good steward of this piece of land. They have not been a good neighbor to Alpine. They have talked, they talked the talk to get that piece of land. Now they need to walk the walk. They need to fix this damage. They need to reopen Loveland, and they need to stop the draining to Deadpool.
Brian Lorenz of Rancho San Diego was one of several residents who suggested Sweetwater may have had an ulterior motive in draining the reservoir to make it easier to sand mine the resources under the water.
I'm assuming, and I could be corrected if I'm wrong, that they also own the sand underneath the reservoir that could be used for aggregate. So the comment then is the timing is dubious in relation to the proposed Cottonwood sand mine. And at some point, every aspect of communication for this project, as well as the sand mine and the developer there, will be looked at and scrutinized. So we may not know why they drained it to Deadpool, but they're a lot closer to a very, very precious resource.
Russell Walsh, a vocal opponent of the draining, said he's done over 60 Public Records Act requests and contends the district didn't need to drain Loveland to meet its water needs. He cited a 2019 newspaper article which quoted Castaneda as saying the district wanted to sand mine Loveland.
His new plan with the chairman of the board is to sand mine Loveland Reservoir and Sweetwater Reservoir. And it's in 2019, David Hernandez, Sweetwater Eyes sand mining at Loveland Reservoir. That has driven this policy from then on. They want to take the lake hostage. They want to use, they can't do sand mining as it stands right now in Loveland. But they want to cannibalize Loveland Reservoir at will, when they want, to top off Sweetwater Reservoir for dredging, because their explorations taught them that they needed to dredge. They couldn't take the water out and dredge. That is what's pushing every single bit of this.
A biologist, Steve Hales, said draining Loveland has been disastrous for wildlife and that it may cost more than the district saved its ratepayers to restore the damage to the dock and the hiking trails. A disabled veteran asked why the district didn't make efforts to transfer the fish to another reservoir and save them. Susan Hales, a biology expert, said a fishing program is a sign of a healthy environment and that plant life has been lost due to the extreme draining. Another audience member asked why no environmental review was done before draining the reservoir, a water source relied upon by mountain lions, eagles, and other wildlife. She noted that if not for the unexpectedly heavy recent rains, the lake might still be empty. Area resident Misty Lewis spoke emotionally about nearly losing her home to fire. An angry confrontation ensued, in which Sweetwater officials threatened to walk out, and Chairman Travis Lyon intervened to assure that everyone would be respected.
My name is Misty Lewis. I've lived out here since 1994. I live off of the Hathertool and Carbaker. When I moved out here, Loveland was full all the way to the bridge to Hathertool Road. It was like a lake, and then it went around the corner to the reservoir where they fished. And it was beautiful, and I did not know that anyone was going to be draining that. Eventually, that full lake part got drained, but they kept the other part, and I never really understood why they drained it to begin with. That lake saved our community in 2020. My house almost burned down. That fire started at my neighbor's and came right up the road. It was the scariest thing on earth. And if it wasn't for my neighbors who came to my home and used my well until the power went out, and then Astria coming and getting water from Loveland, we would have lost every house up on Carbaker. There are over 100 homes up there. They stopped that fire there. I mean, it still went, but it could have been so much worse. We are in a time of the most rain in the entire time I think I've lived in this community. I don't know how you can use all that water. Where did it all go with all the water that we've had? I don't think your people that are buying the water in Chula Vista, Otay, Eastlake would be really happy if they saw what you were doing to our community. Those are our neighbors. And you know what? I believe you're both elected officials. And you stand there with smug looks on your face.
Yeah.
And you just act like we are a bunch of country bumpkins, which we are not. You roll your eyes, you smirk.
Well, you're accusing me. You're accusing me.
Don't give him an excuse to leave. Don't give him an excuse to leave. No, no, no. He's looking for an excuse to leave, Travis. He's looking for an excuse to leave. He tries this stuff. Have the woman sit down. Have the woman sit down. He's looking for an excuse to leave. He gets scared easily.
I want to have respect. I want to have an opportunity to Q&A. And a lot of people that ask Q&A, I understand.
Draining the reservoir saved the district's ratepayers just $5 a month or $30 over 6 months at a cost of draining Loveland down to bare earth. To Alpine residents, the savings was not worth the cost. After public comments ended, the Alpine Community Planning Group's board members held a discussion and raised questions of their own, such as which federal and state agencies might have jurisdiction with an aim to reach out to those authorities. Mary Kay Borchard thanked everyone present and noted that conflict nurtured well promotes growth. Then she asked what the plan is for Sweetwater to repair the damage and get the lake reopened to the public, which has been closed since January. Quinteros spoke of severe erosion that's left cliffs 12 to 15 feet high that he says are dangerous. Ironically, although no environmental review was done before draining the lake, he said environmental review would be required before trails could be repaired, and the trails were...
And as far as the repairs go, I did mention that we're putting in the budget an option to fix the trail access. There's a lot of erosion out of... has any of you seen it after the...
Of course,
it's budget.
And it's gotten worse, right? So we're... The idea that I have is that we might have to put a bridge to go from one side to get to the other side where the fishing dock is. Right? That's not going to be easy. Access is limited, so we'll be looking at those options. We'll likely have to do an environmental review for that special project, but it's something that we are planning on doing. One, you know, I cannot give you a timeline at this point, because we don't know the extent of the repair. We don't have a budget yet. The fishing float is covered under our insurance policy, so we're working with them as a way to reestablish. So those are the two things I'd like to mention to the group. I know they're of interest. So we are planning on doing that and doing the proper work.
But as of now, the reservoir and trails remain closed to the public with no reopening date forecast. They've been closed since January. Quinteros said the district is looking at restocking the lake with fish, but that Fish and Wildlife officials must approve this, and they might not allow non-native species to be restored. The district also needs to develop a budget for the restocking. That news leaves fishing enthusiasts frustrated, since Loveland was the only local reservoir offering free access for people to fish. Chairman Lyon asked if there is a habitat restoration plan. Quintero said there is not, and insisted that habitats at Loveland are looking extremely healthy with the rain. Planning group member Amelia Hay asked about the land swap deal with the Forest Service. Quinteros insisted there is no commitment to keep the water at any specific level. While the land grant promises bird watching, he said, you can bird watch, but that doesn't mean you will see birds. Planning group member Mike Milligan asked Castaneda point blank whether the district has plans to sand mine at Loveland. Here is that exchange.
Do you have plans to do sand mine? Have you guys, have you conducted any exploratory research into sand mining at Loveland?
We've looked at a restoration project and what that might entail, but our first priority is Sweetwater, because we have growth of algae and other things like that, so we're looking at ways that we can enhance the quality of the reservoir and make the water safer and cleaner.
So you have explored sand mining at Sweetwater?
Yeah.
Have you done any research or exploration of the viability of sand mining and Loveland?
Very preliminary, just basically aerial type pictures.
Asked about the status of dam repairs now needed, Quintero said the district is looking at fixing the valve and repairing stairs. Both those repairs were in the works before the latest heavy rains. He said a consultant is still doing an assessment that will be reviewed by the state's Department of Dams before any dam repairs can happen. Borchard told Sweetwater officials that she wants to see them repair the fishing float and restore access to the parking lot and trails, a sentiment echoed by several of her colleagues. Planning group member Darlene Cossio grilled Quinteros about a sign at Loveland that touts the promises made during the land swap with the Forest Service.
I'm reading the sign that is at Loveland. It's called Loveland Reservoir Fishing Program, owned and operated by Sweetwater Authority. And in that sign, it says, to protect and preserve water quality and natural habitat, Sweetwater Authority and the U.S. Forest Service established a unique partnership to promote public fishing access in exchange for a parcel of land near the reservoir previously owned by the U.S. government. Sweetwater Authority provided land near Descanso to the National Forest System. This exchange increased natural habitat and forest lands available to San Diego County and Southern California residents and wildlife. At the same time, Sweetwater Authority improved public fishing access at Loveland Reservoir. Fishing activities at Loveland are designed to protect public health and benefit the community. Activities are monitored by Sweetwater Authority and USDA Forest Service personnel. So in a way, I think my question would be, did your draining of Loveland go against this promise that you made based on this signage that you placed there at the reservoir?
Clearly, the answer is, Ms. Sign, that's not the direction I'm receiving from the leads in the board. So, I really have not much to offer in terms of that. I worked out getting the water to a customer early. That's what I was hired for.
So I guess my question then would be, I see this as binding, and I hope that you'll look into and do research on this promise or commitment that was made with the land.
John Sullivan, another planning group member, noted that to maintain shoreline access for fishing as promised should require having a shoreline. But Quintero stuck the question, instead revealing that the district may have to build a bridge before reopening those damaged trails.
You said that water rights that the land swap didn't give water rights, just access to the shoreline. But how low does the reservoir have to be for you to consider that there's still a shoreline?
What
would you consider if there's a shoreline? Obviously, there's got to be some water, right? So.
Just to kind of reiterate, there are a couple of things. The answer is right now, based on the amount of water in Sweetwater's reservoir, you shouldn't have any reason, or you said, hey, that would be enough water for up to 2 years. Is it fair to say that you're, based on that, there's unlikely or you're not planning on doing any draws for the next 2 years?
Mm-hmm. I don't see a reason why we would do that.
And then,
well, there's no plan for it.
Yeah.
So
that's right. The status of the public access right now is closed, but you guys, and you're doing a feasibility study to improve the trails, or restore the trails? Or to restore access. Okay.
There is a lot of erosion. I am not sure we could fill that. It's just too big of an area. So you may be having to look at other options such as being good.
Planning group members voiced frustration and indicated they want Sweetwater to keep lines of communication open. The Alpine Community Planning Group unanimously approved creating a subcommittee to look into options for addressing the problems at Loveland Reservoir and to report back to the full board at a future meeting. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
An El Cajon handyman who waded into a pond left by rainwater in Julian to retrieve his dog has contracted a rare flesh-eating bacteria. Exposed through a small cut on his arm, 41-year-old Jeff Bova developed necrotizing fasciitis and later died of the infection. His mother, Susan McIntyre, spoke with NBC7 in San Diego to warn others to seek help immediately if a cut starts turning red or blistering, and to stay out of standing water that may contain bacteria. Her son tried treating the infection himself with antibiotic cream, even after the wound became swollen and oozing. His skin turned warm and purple. He also developed fever and vomiting. By the time the infection became so painful that he went to the hospital, it was too late to save him. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, prompt treatment with prescription antibiotics is the only way to treat necrotizing fasciitis. The infection spreads quickly, and even with treatment, between 25% and 33% of patients with the condition die. That's because the infection destroys muscles, skin, and body tissues, ultimately causing sepsis or blood poisoning. Fortunately, the condition is rare. On average, less than 1,000 cases are documented in people each year in the U.S. Pets can also develop the life-threatening skin infections, so it's important to keep pets out of brackish water, especially if they have any exposed wounds or bites. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Daniela Torres.
El Cajon's planning commissioners have voted unanimously to revoke the approved status of the Motel 6 on Montrose Court after two registered sex offenders were arrested for alleged sexual assault of an underage girl in a room at the motel. The commission gave the motel a list of conditions to comply with within 30 days, including hiring round-the-clock security and undergoing training on human trafficking. The motel can stay open under a conditional use permit for up to 90 days, but must come before the planning commission before that deadline to determine whether or not the motel will be allowed to continue operating in the city. The two sex offenders were wearing ankle bracelets, and one was staying at the motel under a county-funded voucher program for homeless people when they were arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting the young teen girl and videotaping the actions. The city has indicated it believes other girls may have been victimized by the men. Attorney Jason Sacuzzo, representing the motel's owners, told the commission that the motel is no longer accepting vouchers from PATH, the organization that sent the sex offender to the motel. The lawyer said the motel owners were not aware that some voucher recipients had just been released from jail. The county has said its voucher program is open to all homeless people, including convicted criminals, though individuals are kicked out if they violate the rules. A spokesperson for El Cajon Police told planning commissioners that the department has received over 350 calls requesting a police response at the motel over the year prior to the alleged assault for various other crimes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz. El Cajon's planning commissioners have voted unanimously to revoke the approved status of the Motel 6 on Montrose Court after two registered sex offenders were arrested for alleged sexual assault of an underage girl in a room at the motel. The commission gave the motel a list of conditions to comply with within 30 days, including hiring round-the-clock security and undergoing training on human trafficking. The motel can stay open under a conditional use permit for up to 90 days, but must come before the planning commission before that deadline to determine whether or not the motel will be allowed to continue operating in the city. The two sex offenders were wearing ankle bracelets, and one was staying at the motel under a county-funded voucher program for homeless people when they were arrested for allegedly sexually assaulting the young teen girl and videotaping the actions. The city has indicated it believes other girls may have been victimized by the men. Attorney Jason Sacuzzo, representing the motel's owners, told the commission that the motel is no longer accepting vouchers from PATH, the organization that sent the sex offender to the motel. The lawyer said the motel owners were not aware that some voucher recipients had just been released from jail. The county has said its voucher program is open to all homeless people, including convicted criminals, though individuals are kicked out if they violate the rules. A spokesperson for El Cajon Police told planning commissioners that the department has received over 350 calls requesting a police response at the motel over the year prior to the alleged assault for various other crimes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Jonathan Getz.
With Destination East County.
There's a wide assortment of events coming up across San Diego's East County, including Cajon Classic Cruises, a butterfly jungle, music festivals and concerts, a Lego building event, a wine and food festival, Campo Days, Wild in the Country at Lions, Tigers and Bears in Alpine, a Western Days parade, a rodeo, and Descanso Day.
Cajon Classic Cruises continue each Wednesday from 5 to 7:30 p.m. all summer long along Main Street in downtown El Cajon. And you can get a full schedule of the events at downtownelcajon.com.
The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in Escondido invites you to a spring safari featuring a butterfly jungle. Visitors can wander through the hidden jungle aviary among hundreds of colorful, fluttering butterflies, have a chance to feed them, and learn how they contribute to our ecosystem, as well as help save wildlife in our own backyard. Spring Safari featuring Butterfly Jungle will shine a spotlight on the individual local wildlife in the Southwest region, including San Diego, a biodiversity hotspot. Guests are also encouraged to visit the Safari Park's native Nectar Garden and Baja Gardens. Guests can also enjoy live music, dancing, juggling, and strawberry-themed treats. The Spring Safari featuring Butterfly Jungle continues through May 14th with check-in from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. daily. Find more information at sdzsafaripark.org/spring-safari.
El Cajon's Dinner in a Concert series opens May 5th and will continue every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. from May through September. Opening night will feature Twisted Gypsy, a Fleetwood Mac tribute band taking you back to the early days of 70s rock and roll. The concerts will be held at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon on Main Street between Magnolia and Valentine. Other concerts coming up in May include the Jim Allen Band on May 12th, the Patrick Howard Trumpet Band May 19th, and Fortunate Son on May 26th. For a full schedule of events all summer long, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa is hosting a Lego Build event on April 29th from 12 noon to 4 p.m. You're invited to bring the kids and join the L-Gage Museum Master Builders in front of the Grossmont Center Railroad Model Train Display for a fun afternoon with Legos. No registration is required, so you can stop by anytime and enjoy viewing the trains as well as fun with Legos. For more information, visit grossmontcenter.com.
On May 6th, Cuyamaca College is combining several major events for a true springtime extravaganza. Coyote Music Festival will present a range of amazing artists in the Gardens Amphitheater all day, from rock and roll bands to singer-songwriters' melodic tunes. The Water Conservation Garden will host its own Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival, also on May 6th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Guests can watch butterfly releases, and children can join Miss Sparty Plants and Miss Monarch at a pollinator party to hear stories and craft their own pollinator wings. The garden will also have specialty vendors, workshops, and food trucks. In addition, Cuyamaca College's Ornamental Horticulture Department will hold its largest plant sale of the year in their brand new nursery. Plus, the Heritage of the Americas Museum will be hosting tours throughout the day. Find more details at thegarden.org.
You're invited to experience the history and heritage of San Diego's East County during Campo Days on May 6th and 7th. Guests can experience historic train rides, vintage vehicles, equestrian events, military history, food, music, and more at four locations in Campo: the Gaskill Brothers Stone Store Museum, Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility, Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, and the Motor Transport Museum. You can find more information at visitcampo.com.
You're invited to savor tastes from 25 wineries, 3 breweries, and 20 local restaurants at Vintage Alpine on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms in Flin Springs. Vintage Alpine began in 1990 and is now one of the biggest events of its kind in San Diego County. More than 500 people from all over the Southwest attend the event, which also features relaxing live music in a beautiful garden setting, as well as a silent auction and opportunities to meet wine and food experts. All proceeds from Vintage Alpine are used by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine to provide services and programs supporting the children of San Diego. For tickets and reservations, you can visit vintagealpine.org.
The City of Santee will host its Friday Nights Live Entertainment Series at the Santee Trolley Square, kicking off summer with family fun and entertainment. The events will be held each Friday from May 19th through June 9th from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. The lineup includes It's Never Too Late, Expressions Dance and Movement, Bill McGee Blues, and Stomp Music School. Learn more at santeespecialevents.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a nonprofit exotic animal sanctuary in Alpine, invites you to their annual fundraising bash, Wild in the Country, on May 20th. This year's event features MCs Jagger and Christy from Magic 92.5 Radio, as well as Broadway stars Sandra Joseph and Ron Bomer, the lead actors in Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables. Dinner will be prepared by world-renowned chef Jeffrey Strauss, known as the Chef to the Stars, for pleasing the palates of dignitaries, presidents, royalty, and entertainment icons. The main event will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. on May 20th. There is also a pre-event reception for platinum and gold-level ticket holders at 1 p.m. For tickets, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The theme of this year's Western Days Parade in Lakeside will be Fighting for Justice. District Attorney Summer Steffen will serve as Grand Marshal of the parade on Saturday, April 29th. The 59th annual parade, sponsored by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, begins at 9:35 a.m. and will proceed along Main Avenue in downtown Lakeside. The next day, May 30th, the annual Lakeside Rodeo will be held, featuring traditional Western competitions such as bull riding and barrel races. For more on the rodeo, visit lakesiderodeo.com.
Descanso's first community fair was held back in 1899 under a tent near the creek. The tradition has grown through the years to include a parade and a community fair, which this year will be held on June 3rd. The festivities take place at the historic Descanso Town Hall on Viejas Grade Road in Descanso, a small rural town east of Alpine. Arrive early, since roads close at 8 a.m. for the parade, which starts at 9. The parade is followed by the fair, which begins at 10 a.m. and runs until 4 p.m. You're invited to get your boots on at Descanso Day to learn more about the town's history and enjoy the fun, which includes music by Whiskey Ridge, food by Descanso Junction, and beer served up by Burning Beard Brewing Company. There will also be vendors, children's games, face painting, horseshoe tournaments, a cakewalk, raffle, and more.
That's all for this week.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
An 8-year-old horse named Dobby is safe after falling 100 feet off a trail in Jamul on April 16th. San Diego Humane Society's emergency response team rescuers hiked 4 to 5 miles down to reach the horse, which was standing on a slope. According to Nina Thompson, San Diego Humane Society's Director of Public Relations, the horse had injuries to its abdomen and leg. Rescuers helped the horse cross a stream onto flat ground, then returned at 1 a.m. to bring the horse food, water, and a blanket, keeping it as comfortable as possible overnight. The initial plan was for a San Diego Fire Department helicopter to try and hoist the horse out at daylight, but the helicopter was unable to fly at the time. So, the Humane Society's team hiked back to the horse in the morning along with a veterinarian to monitor the horse's wounds. Over the next few hours, they walked the injured horse up tough terrain to the top of the ravine where CAL FIRE and County Department of Animal Services workers were on standby. The veterinarian rebandaged Dobby's leg wounds before transporting him to a critical care unit. Thompson says the Humane Society hopes Dobby will make a full recovery. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jacob Pamis.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Fifty-three-year-old Eddie Faulkner was arrested by El Cajon police on November 7th last year on charges of failing to register as a sex offender and parole revocation. On April 17th, he died in the Vista Detention Facility. According to the Sheriff's Department, Faulkner was the only occupant of the cell where he was found unresponsive around 7 p.m. Deputies and medical staff performed life-saving measures including CPR until paramedics arrived and assumed medical care. They were unable to save Faulkner despite these efforts, and he was pronounced dead at the site. Sheriff's homicide investigators were notified and are investigating, as is the protocol for all in-custody deaths. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board representative was also notified and responded to the scene. The cause and manner of death will be determined by the medical examiner. The Sheriff's Department has been under scrutiny for several years due to the high number of in-custody deaths. Newly elected Sheriff Kelly Martinez has taken numerous steps to try and reduce jail deaths. However, several more in-custody deaths have occurred so far this year. A statement from the Sheriff's Department reads, "We extend our sympathies to the Faulkner family and those affected by this death. A sheriff's family liaison officer will support the family as they deal with the loss of a loved one." Reporting for East County Magazine from El Cajon, this is Jacob Pamis.
Now it's time for East County Magazine's Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers report, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
This is John Tidwell with a warning for consumers. Scammers are targeting electronic benefits transfer, or EBT cards, authorities warn. Robert Gare, a senior citizen in El Cajon, was shocked to discover when he went shopping for groceries at Food for Less in El Cajon that over $1,100 in CalFresh benefits had been stolen off his EBT card. Since he had only used the card at that store, Gare and police believe he was a victim of a skimmer device attached by a thief to the store's card reader. But the county has only reimbursed $120 for the most recent month's benefits, and Gare may never see the rest of his stolen benefits returned, benefits that he'd been saving up for months. Such scams are alarmingly prevalent and hit hard on vulnerable recipients, including low-income individuals, seniors on fixed incomes, and disabled people. Bianca Sosa Graciano, program specialist at Self-Sufficiency Services with the county's Health and Human Services Agency, told our news editor that scammers ripping off benefits on EBT cards is a nationwide issue. During the COVID-19 pandemic emergency declaration, EBT monthly benefits were dramatically increased to help people in need, but that emergency declaration ended March 31st. Graciano says, if that's stolen, we can only reimburse up to the base allotment, not the emergency allotment. Moreover, California's state police allows only the most recent month's benefit, a mere $120, to be reimbursed. Gare has exercised his right to appeal the denial to a judge, and that decision remains pending. When Gare spoke with the county to file an appeal, he was asked for a police report, but El Cajon Police Department initially refused to take a police report on the theft, even though the stolen benefit had been cashed in at the Istanbul Market in Arizona. Gare is a senior volunteer with East County Magazine. Our editor called El Cajon Police and was told that the department no longer investigated EBT card thefts, but instead referred such matters to the county. That's drastically different from the La Mesa Police, where earlier this year, Lieutenant Katie Lynch told our editor that the La Mesa Police Department actively investigates skimmer thefts, educates merchants on how to check devices daily, reviews surveillance videos, and even takes DNA samples to catch the thieves. After our editor provided that information to El Cajon Police Department's Sergeant Kevin Riley, he spoke with Robert Gare, and on March 29th, Sergeant Riley emailed our editor to state that a skimmer had recently been recovered from Food for Less, so that was likely how his information was compromised. But Sergeant Riley added, unfortunately, there was a 2-week time frame where it could have been placed, and therefore the business was unable to get video surveillance of it and the person responsible for it. While it may be too late to help Gare, El Cajon Police Department is now taking action to try and catch future skimmer scammers. As a smaller agency, they have working agreements with the Economic Crime Task Force at the U.S. Secret Service, which investigates financial crimes, as well as with the San Diego FBI office to analyze card skimmers in hopes of identifying suspects, Sergeant Riley said. We asked if the El Cajon Police Department might implement a program similar to La Mesa's to help educate merchants on how to spot skimming devices to protect consumers. Sergeant Riley confirmed via email, we are going to put together a post on our department's social media. It's going to show how quickly they can be put on and what to look for when you are at a point of sale. This should help both businesses and consumers locate them. This wasn't the first report of a skimming device stealing benefits from a customer at the Food for Less in El Cajon. Gare says he notified both Food for Less and its parent corporation, Kroger, and mentioned our media investigation. Soon after, on April 7th, he went grocery shopping that morning at the same store. Surprise, he informed us. They recently installed new, different card readers at the register checkout. The new model device has no rubber-style guard around the keyboard, so there is nowhere for scammers to hide a pinhole camera. Gare has added extra precautions now to his food shopping procedures. He says on his latest shopping trip, I had the cashier check the card reader for me. Then I checked it personally by looking closely, tugging on the device, and making sure the safety tape was not tampered with. Of course, when I got home, I called the number on the back of my EBT card and changed my PIN again. This will be my new routine from now on, he concludes. To avoid such scams, the county advises EBT cardholders to never share personal information such as your social security number, bank information, EBT card, or PIN number with strangers or organizations you are not familiar with. And the county advises the state of California and the county of San Diego will never call or text asking for your card or PIN number. Always keep your PIN number secret, the county advises, and change it often. Food benefits aren't the only types of benefits on some EBT cards. People can sign up for direct deposit if you are part of the CalWORKS program, so benefits go directly into your bank account instead of a card. Many banks offer free accounts if you sign up for direct deposit. Each month, you will be able to access your benefits on time through your bank account. This protects your benefits and prevents fraud. The county site states, while the county is able to replace stolen benefits in most cases, this process typically takes a few days and does not guarantee you will get your money back, a lesson that Gare and others have learned the hard way. The state is working to upgrade EBT security technology, but for now, the county recommends that everyone take steps to protect their benefits. And if you've been a victim of EBT theft, you can report EBT theft by calling 866-262-9881.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is John Tidwell with an education report. Eligible high school and undergraduate students who reside in communities served by San Diego Gas and Electric Company are encouraged to apply for a $10,000 scholarship under a new initiative called the Inspiring Future Leaders STEM Scholarship Program. This initiative aims to support students of color, girls and women, in high school or college, who plan on pursuing a degree in STEM-related courses of study. That's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Scholarship winners who maintain their eligibility and pursue their course of study in a traditional four-year university can have their scholarships renewed for an additional 3 years, meaning they could receive a total of $40,000 in financial aid. The deadline to apply for this scholarship is April 27th at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. SDG&E CEO Carolyn Wynn says, "One of the best strategies to narrow the gender and racial gap in STEM fields is to increase access to higher educational opportunities and provide the financial support students need to pursue STEM degrees." Wynn is an electrical engineer and a longtime champion of SDG&E's Be That Girl initiative to inspire girls to pursue STEM careers through mentorships and outreach activities. She says our region's economic prosperity depends on employers developing the workforce of tomorrow in order to fill the growing number of jobs that require STEM knowledge, and that includes helping to alleviate financial barriers such as student loan debt. According to the U.S. Census Bureau and Pew Research, women only make up 27% of the STEM workforce, while people of color only make up 33%. The scholarship is administered by Scholarship America and funded by company shareholders, not SDG&E ratepayers. All applicants must have a permanent address in SDG&E's service territory, which covers San Diego County and South Orange County. Students eligible to apply for the scholarships include those identifying as women of any race, as well as all genders who are Black or African American, Indian or Alaskan Native, Hispanic or Latino, Asian, Native Hawaiian, or other Pacific Islander. The program is open to high school seniors, graduates, and current college undergraduates who plan to enroll in a full-time undergraduate STEM area of study at an accredited community college or university for the upcoming academic year.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.